There is this beautiful thought in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali where they say that the life is like the flight of an eagle, where you flap your wings high and then you bring the wings down gracefully. So in a sense, you push the boundaries of experience to to its highest form, and then you kind of slowly start to retreat and withdraw from the world of experiences.
I'm Dave Buddha, and welcome to Darken the Page, the podcast that asks the question, where does great art come from? Today's conversation is with best-selling author Karan Bajaj. Karan was born and raised in the Indian Himalayas and now lives in Brooklyn, New York. This conversation with Karan reminded me in a big way of why I do this podcast. Immediately in this interview, I'm inspired by Karan's life and how he balances work and play. He is honestly a master at this. He does something called 414, which is 4 years of work and 1 year of sabbatical. And it immediately got me thinking. I immediately started planning my own trips and remembering how important travel and taking time off is. Karan has a new book called The Yoga of Max's Discontent, which is now available as of a couple days ago, wherever fine books are sold. You can see a link to it in all the other show notes at darkenthepage.com/053. Today's conversation is brought to you by Penzu, the world's most popular online journaling platform. Check them out and sign up free at penzu.com. That's P-E-N-Z-U.com. If you decide to upgrade, you can use the code DARKEN for $5 off. And now here's my conversation with best-selling author Karan Bajaj. First question I'd love to start with, there's a quote that a guy who's on the podcast, Amir, interviewed, he shared with me, which I love, which is from Henry David Thoreau. And he said, how vain is it to sit down and write if we haven't stood up to live? And it was the thing that really came through when I was reading your New York Times article, and I was just kind of looking and, you know, browsing your life, was that you really took some risks in your life. And out of that came a lot of writing. Out of that came a lot of inspiration. And so I just love you to speak to that a little bit. What that's meant to you, and in your journey with that lately.
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think for me, because I was reflecting before coming here on articulating my own writing process, and I think I'm kind of an engineer. So I'm trained as an engineer. Went to business school. Pretty left brain. So I think in a way, I think of writing in a pretty left brain way. I think of it as a combination of entertainment and meaning. Like for me, it all simplifies down to, is it a page turning entertainment, and does it have a deep meaning? And if I crack those two, then I know I have a great product. So I think I always kind of think with that filter.
Yeah.
And with that filter, what starts to happen is that the entertainment forces me to live a very, very big, interesting life. And the meaning kind of keeps forcing me to deepen my life. And I think as a result of, like, I've constructed my whole life to be around that, because I know that, like, to live those kind of, have those very meaningful, big, interesting experiences, there has to be a period of time when I'm not worried about money at all, and I'm having those experiences and pushing the limits of those experiences. And that's why I've, like, held on to a corporate career, done pretty well at it, and, like, keep doing that for 4 years, and then take that, you know, as I said, the 414 rule. And in that year that I take off, I live, like, I don't call it an entertaining, like, an interesting life, but I do have some interesting principles for the year, which are completely polar to my 4 years that I'm working, which leads to very interesting experiences. And that, I think that kind of, like, always fills the well for me and gives me, like they inspire my writing.
I really want to talk more about this 414 thing.
And
as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, I was like, I want to do that, you know? And, so I want to talk about two things. I ask you just to talk about your experience with that, but also, you know, where do you draw the line between work and play, you know, or work and time off? You know, if you're writing, is that considered time off, you know, even if it makes you money? And how do you distinguish between those?
Yeah, no, it's actually a very, very good question. For me, it's almost like a mindset more than a than like what the work I'm doing for the, so for me, the mindset of work is that I'm very,
And also the 414 meaning, so because you said it, and I may cut that part out, but
yeah.
4 years on working and then 1 year sabbatical.
Correct,
Right.
exactly.
Okay.
And in those 4 years, I could be, when it means working, doesn't necessarily mean a corporate job. I could be working on my writing also. I think for me, the idea is that the 4 years that I'm working, whether it's the corporate job or the writing or a combination of both, I'm extremely goal driven. Like I have a lot of goals about, that I need to read this, I need to read that, I want to excel in the job, I have to accomplish these tasks, and I have to like grow a lot as a human being. All those, like, I have a lot of goals, personal and professional. And then in the year that I take off, I'm consciously completely goalless at many levels. Physically, I'm goalless in the sense, like, for instance, in the last sabbatical that my wife and I took 2.5 years ago, which, the article is also about, we really decided that we were going to take a year off, that we planned that we would take a year off, but we didn't make any booking at all till the very last day. And then in the last day before we left, we chose the cheapest flight to Europe, which was to Scotland for $100 or whatever. So we chose the flight to Scotland. And then from Scotland to India, we had no plan at all. No plan. When I say no plan, it was like really arriving at the airport and being like, what is the instinct, or what do people we meet along the road tell us, and we'll keep kind of drifting along that. So I'm almost very conscious about not having any goals and getting comfortable making more decisions out of spontaneity and instinct. So it's almost like when I think of the year on and off, it almost is defined by, I would say, conscious goallessness is one principle. The second big principle for me is what I call like stripping myself of emotional materialism, if you will. Like, I guess people like you and I have figured out that like physical materialism, like houses, cars, etc., are kind of pointless. But I think what we've replaced that is with this noise of like constantly wanting to grow and become better and read a lot of interesting things, meet a lot of interesting people. So that I think has become a, and in those 4 years, I'm like very conscious of those. But in the year off, I don't like, I abandon this idea that I have to grow and become something. I'm just like,
I love that.
I have what I have, and I'm gonna like work out of this. And in physically, that means that I don't have a Kindle, no connections at all. So I perhaps read one or two books again and again for the whole year. Like, it's almost like I'm not reading to grow at all. I just keep reading what I know. So I'm like just repurposing my life to tap from whatever I have in that year and not seeking anything at all.
And I think it's worth saying too that your 4 years, just for people who don't maybe understand, is your 4 years are in your New York City working as like an executive in a large corporation. I mean, you're not, I mean, you really, it's a quite a stark contrast.
It's a stark contrast, exactly. And then I work in a corporation, I go back home, and I plant the seeds of what I might be writing about in the year off, in a way. Like, I plant the seeds by like researching a lot, going to museums or theater, or like, listening a lot of videos, documentaries. So I'm kind of like planting the seed, but I'm truly letting the, I guess, the tree grow in this period of complete silence, if you will, like, emotional silence. And then physically also, the 4 years are quite comfortable. That's why I was saying part of entertainment. So all this stuff is in context of meaning, but part of entertainment comes from the fact that in this 4 years, I'm very comfortable. Like, I'm in New York or whatever, I have an apartment. But in these 4 years, in the year that we are off, I'm very austere. Like, for instance, in the last one, our Europe to India by road was very rough, like sleeping at train stations and stuff. But then we reached the Himalayas in India, and then for 4 months we were like every day sleeping on a floor in an ashram with like 60, 70 people,
That's great.
having like having a cold shower in the like the mountains, which is very cold, but there's no hot water there. Like, we are very stripped down of everything, having like one like one backpack which has been on along, like very ratty clothes. Like, it's just part of the whole idea of like training myself very viscerally from within me that I need nothing to live apart from like a floor, like in an ashram, and that's enough. And like that again helps me once I come back and be kind of grounded a little, not like not getting attached to comfort,
I absolutely love that. I spent I did something similar in 2011, and I was right at the middle. I was, well, it turned out to be at the end, but I didn't realize it at the time. It was kind of at the in the middle of like really pushing as hard as I could for a music career. And I was playing music and I had a manager and I was doing some different stuff. And I got this opportunity to take a bicycle trip across Europe with a friend of mine who's just adventurous and plans crazy things. And he mentioned it to me because we were actually working at the same bar. I was playing at the bar. He was bartending. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go bike through Europe for like 3 months this summer. And I was like, I want to go.
Yeah,
right. He's like, yeah, all right, sure, whatever. I mean, like, he's like, yeah, everybody wants to go. I'm like, no, I'm there. Like, I want to go. And he's like, all right. I was like, he's like, do you have any biking experience? I was like, absolutely not. I have no. I don't even own a bike, honestly. I haven't biked since before I got my driver's license, you know.
Yeah.
And so I bought a bike. I rode it for like a few hours and, you know, packed it up in a bike box, shipped, and we flew off to London. And we went from London to Greece through Turkey in about 3 months.
Amazing,
And about a third of that time I actually spent on my own, too, because after I kind of got a hang of the ropes, and we were tent camping the whole time. So we brought a tent and camped on the side of the road, and just, you know, it was amazing. It was absolutely life-changing. And I think back to it a lot, going to myself, you know, like... I mean, it just,
something
like you know, it's really, I love what you have in this 4-1 thing, 4-1, because it really does seem like that would be, because I almost have this like guilt that I haven't planned something else, or I just know how transformative that was for me.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I so many of my life habits changed in those 3 months.
Right.
And I love the what you were speaking to about like living in this austerity, like really going, because, you know, living in New York City, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, you really you have everything, you have the nice things, the Broadway shows and everything. But going off the grid and really, really stripping life down to its minimum is such a beautiful way to discover things.
No, exactly, absolutely. And I think that's what happens in that year. Like, physically it's austere, emotionally it's very austere. I'm not like hankering for like reading people's opinions and this and that. Like, it's physically austere, emotionally austere, and then very goalless. And I think that's wonderful. So, and then like, but part of that is that it's, that's why the 4 years are important, because I have no financial expectation of the year. Like, I know that I'm gonna lose money. The funny thing though is, financially, that year has always paid back in I've always made more money than I've lost. Like, for this one, like, I got a book deal with Random House, which is a 6-figure book deal, which is quite good for a debut US novelist, like, with a book that I'd written in the year. And what we spent was like $13,000 per person, because like living with nothing really. So so it's always paid back. Again, that's not the point, right? Yeah. Like, I do know. And that's why I think the, like, making sure that the corporate job exists and like the sex and cash kind of theory of the creative is important to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that what I'm doing for cash is not what I do for sex. Like, it's, they are very bifurcated in a way, and I'm just writing the deepest meaning and a very entertaining, what I think is entertaining at least, you know. Mm-hmm.
So, and I love that your jobs allow that kind of flexibility too. I mean, I don't know much about the corporate world, but I guess my assumption would be that they would not be excited about that. You know, and that's
what my assumption was. But truly, I think not too many people. There are two things. One, I think not too many people are asking for that, because I think what I've seen in the US at least is that it's not like Europe or Australia where people are bleeding in and out. I think what I've seen is that people are either on the corporate track or they're off the corporate track, and either hippies or entrepreneurs kind of thing. There are not too many people who are kind of bleeding in and out of the two worlds. So I think not too many people are asking for these experiences. And then honestly, when you come back to your point with your 3-month trip in Europe, I mean, you can't help but be so much more effective. Like, like if you've spent one more year doing the same thing versus spending 1 year living in a ashram, doing meditation and sleeping on a floor, I mean, you have to come back in some form or the other deeper and like more mature as a person, which has to have an effect on work. So I think it kind of shows that you have more depth in your work. And I think that kind of like, so as a result, I think it's never been as linear as that. Like, if people have complained and they've always said, why don't you take 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, and not 1 year? And sometimes I don't have the security that I'll come back to the same job or whether I'll come back to a job at all. But it's always kind of pays back, because I think if you're growing as a person, it has to reflect in some form in a physical way. Like, you know, if you're growing emotionally, it has to come back and reflect. And in some way you get the, people pay you the price for that, you know? So,
So as expected, you know, because one of the things I love about this podcast is it's really just very self-serving for me. I'm really thinking about this for myself. And so I have a little kind of detailed question. So you say you don't write during that year, because for me, I would be so tempted to then make that creative output year, you know, and have a lot of things like that. And I love that you said that, that you'd really... there's just no goals, no expectations, even if they're fun or even if it, you would enjoy it or whatever. You know, do you have ideas and then say, I'm not going to write on purpose? Or do you, how do you work that in terms of like,
I actually do write, but the tightness has gone from my life during that year. So what that means, like, for instance, if I'm in the so in this sabbatical, 4 months was Europe to India by road. I didn't write a word. I didn't have any laptop, nothing at all. So I didn't write a word. 4 months in India, when we were in the mountains, I had bought a laptop in India, which like broke down, whatever. Like there was no expectation to do anything. So that's 8 months of not writing at all. Then the 4 months after that, we were in a small village in Portugal, which is like an artist colony of sorts. And in that village in Portugal, I did write, but it was very... laid back, like 4 hours of writing and then walking, like seeing some random, like unsubtitled Portuguese movie that I don't understand for. Like it was just very drifty. And I don't know, so I do write in this period, but there is no like outcome that I've like planned associated with it.
Yeah. And I love but how I you started off with no, like by starting off by not taking a laptop. I mean, that's already just a huge thing, because then you're more at the whim of what the year wants and what wants to happen. And
and then the Kindle, like letting go of the Kindle is a good thing for me, because I'm a big reader.
Yeah.
And I think that also fills your life with a lot of noise.
I really love that distinction between the physical attachments and the emotional attachments, because we really, you know, for most of us, we really have moved beyond. I mean, it's certainly still nice to get rid of physical attachments. Don't get me wrong, we never really moved beyond that, but to actually look at that other level and say, you know, what else, you know, what if I don't read? What if I don't take input from other people in my brain?
Exactly.
You know, look at all that stuff and look at the noise that's creating. And sometimes that's nice, but to take a fast.
Absolutely. Because otherwise, like here, I mean, I read so, like, you know, this is the Miracle Morning, 5 things that you should do in your morning for 1 hour. I mean, this all good. I mean, I think there is a role for
miracle
all of that.
Miracle evening, miracle afternoon, miracle midnight. You know, it's like, wait, it's like, what should I do here? You know,
exactly. And I think somewhere that tightness has to be balanced by, you know, which is the Buddhist concept also, that you, to achieve enlightenment, you have to be kind of tight as a rope and slack as the river or whatever. Like you have to have that both. The combination of both, because like when he, like as the Buddha said, when he strived too hard, he didn't get the goal. When he let go completely, he didn't get the goal, like balance of striving and relax. So I think that kind of combination is very good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And you grew up in Himalayas in India. Yeah. Northern India.
Yeah. I grew up in Northern India, up in the Himalayas for a good part of my childhood, but then it gets like you get a either or choice that you want to become a shopkeeper in the mountains or you have to move to the plains in order to kind of move ahead, if you will. So then I moved to Delhi to, you know, study and stuff. Yeah.
Was there sort of a returning home sense when you started doing the sabbatical and then found that sort of simplicity back where you grew up?
Yeah, not very consciously, but I think from time to time you look at your life and you're like, you do question what have you become almost. Like, you know, for instance, in simple ways like attachment to organic food and green juices and like even holistic living. And I just kind of think back that we never talked about all this stuff up in the Himalayas and our life was quite holistic, but there was no like kind of pressing attachments to all these things. So at time to time I look at my life and I feel that it's too burdened by attachments of, even if it's not physical attachments, but as I said, emotional attachments, it gets too burdened by like identities and baggage and who I am and I'm a vegetarian or I'm not. Like there were no, it was very choiceless, like, you know, growing up there, you had a very choiceless kind of, like you had no preferences. There was a very choiceless kind of life. And I think it's good to have that for a period of time, you know? So there is a, you know, like being completely choiceless in life. Like just being a monk, taking whatever is like a beggar with a begging bowl, you know, whatever life is giving for a while, not having any preferences that I'm a vegetarian, I'm a health fanatic, I'm this or that. I'm like, fine, if I'm in Bulgaria for 3 weeks, I will eat meat if that's what's offered.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. So I think that's good for me to kind of like simplify life from time to time.
Yeah, the choice list is, that's beautiful. Yeah. And something that I you know, so I don't want to say underrated is the word, but it's like, that's so, it doesn't seem to occur to us that that's good until we have it, or until we reflect on that. It's right. Not the first thing people would choose. <We're> not, yes. Nobody's going to choose choicelessness, you know, like that's given the choice. People want choice. And so that's really beautiful. Yeah.
And where it helps the writing process is that it helps, obviously the meaning part is very clear, that all of this just gives you a level of like stillness in your mind so that you're operating from a place of silence and like something within yourself. But the entertainment also, like, I think what happens with me is that like a lot of adventures happen because I'm not tight, right? Like, to your point, like if you're on the road trip from Europe bicycling, that's obviously going to have a much more, like your mind will open up to new worlds in a way that will never in your current environment. So I think, and obviously always my writing ends up reflecting those experiences. And then obviously it's surprising that reviews always play back that the most visceral part of the novel, when I look at the Goodreads now, like right now the book has very, you know, touchingly positive reviews right now, the new novel which is about to come out. And all of them are saying that the beginning part seems very deliberate. And then you're completely immersed in the fictive dream that the moment you land in India. And it's like, so true. It's just like, it shows, because I had like engineered the beginning of the novel because it's set in the Bronx in the 1970s by reading like 50 to 70 books on Bronx, researching to death, but it still shows, the act of the authorship still shows. And in India, I'd like barely read any books and I was just living the experience. And it like the reader does make it out where you researched and where you lived. So it's kind of like, it's striking to see that happens, you know?
Yeah. So, well, and the irony of that too, because I imagine in the book, like the guy is going through the same journey as you were going through as a writer, you know, you're pressing, trying to really figure out the Bronx, and then the India part is easier and it's sort of like a letting go.
And the reader figures it out. And that's why it just kind of has to be like that. I have to live my stories and not think about them and research about, but to the original quote that you made, you know, it's exactly that. Yeah.
This week's episode is brought to you by Penzu. Penzu is the world's most popular online journaling platform, penzu.com. So I was checking out Penzu's podcast today, and Penzu has a podcast. It's called the Penzu Podcast. And the latest interview, episode 4, is with a woman named Kathleen Adams. And I was listening to it, and I was checking out some of her work, and she's actually putting on something called the National Journaling Conference, which I found really cool. And that there's a National Journaling Conference, and it's in Hendersonville, North Carolina. And I sort of pictured this conference of, I guess when I think about journaling, I think about putting your innermost thoughts and experience into a journal, and then sometimes it doesn't get shared with anybody. And so I pictured this conference of lots of people who keep everything in a journal, and maybe they don't really share as much, but I think it would be an awesome experience. Anyways, Kathleen is the latest interview in the Penzu podcast. Penzu is just all about supporting journaling. And for me, in the last couple of years, and I've mentioned this before on the show, journaling has been such a part of my writing experience. It's given me an outlet to write when I don't really feel like I have anything good to write. When I'm not in the zone or flowing, I go to the journal and I just write whatever. I write, you know, I don't know what to do, and here I am. And so I absolutely recommend journaling. Penzu's created this magnificent online platform. It's especially good if you don't want the journal to be accessible, because you can lock it, which I think is a really cool feature. And so check out the Penzu podcast. You can just type in Penzu, P-E-N-Z-U, in the iTunes search bar, or you can go to penzu.com and check it out there. If you upgrade with Penzu, use the code DARKEN to get $5 off. And now back to the show. So one of the things that always concerns me is something I sort of call the window of opportunity when it comes to writing. And I think one of my fears, if I were to take a year off, is that I would have an idea like 2 months in, let's say, and I'd really want to do it. But if I waited 10 months, that ship would have sailed. So I'm curious how you take the inspiration from that year. And I mean, in a way, like, I mean, I imagine like day one of back in New York after with a year's worth of ideas, that's also really intimidating. Like, how do you decide what to do? I mean, you've got all these things you could do. So how do you, you know, how does that actually look when you get back into the city?
Good question, because the first, when you come back, everything is very jarring, you know, obviously the noise, and then like, you know, if you're commuting to work, and then also the superficiality of not to judge anybody else, but like the point is that you come back after a year and so somebody's like, there's a new restaurant that's opened up. It's a you're just in a very, it's very jarring. Like the whole world is very jarring in every form, you know, but all of that, and I think that's good, because that kind of sense of displacement also ends up like reflecting in the writing in some form or the other, because like almost all my stories are the Joseph Campbell kinds, in which the hero goes off on a journey, so they all follow the same circle in a, like unconsciously, and it's good to be both going from the known to the unknown world, and then the return back to the known world is know, it's good to feel the displacement in both directions.
Absolutely.
So it's jarring for me, a little bit different from, I think what I've seen with is that I actually don't even think of myself as a true writer in a way. Like what I've seen with all my writer friends here are they're always, I guess, creating, and which I am also, but I don't know, I get possessed by an idea for years, and that's the only idea I write about, and I don't know any other idea. So it's a kind of a little bit different in a way. Like, for instance, this particular novel has consumed me for years, the whole idea of it. Like, because it's, like, you know, there is a lot of Eastern thought in it, like meditation, yoga, and then there's a lot of physical adventure in it. And this whole idea in some form had been consuming me for many years. And I just kind of like operate with like ideas, you know, like I just write when I'm possessed by an idea, and that idea typically holds me for many years and then comes out in the form of a novel. And so I don't have too many abandoned drafts or abandoned ideas. So when I hear my writer friends talk about all their unfinished novels, and I just don't, I'm not like that at all. I've thought of three ideas, and I've written three novels and published three novels. So it's just like, so I'm very, I guess I'm just very simple. Maybe I'm just not, I don't know.
It sounds like a blessing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's a blessing or not. But I wish I had this reservoir of 80 ideas out of which I was choosing the one. I've just, I think, been consumed by three big ideas over the course of the last decade.
Yeah.
And which have each got an entertainment combination, a meaning layer to it. And those are all that I've fleshed out through the 3-4 years of researching and the 1 year of writing in a way.
That's cool. So how do you balance, so you said the last 3 months, your last couple months, you've been on a sabbatical, or you're in the middle or the beginning of a book promotion sabbatical for the most part.
Yeah.
But you wrote the book while you were doing a full-time job. And you know, my sister worked in, I grew up in Boston, my sister worked in New York City. And I know a full-time job is really a full-time job for the most part. You know, it's not a, oh, we're getting off at 2 today because it's a nice day, it's sunny out, we're going to go surfing or something. I mean, there are some long hours in New York. And how do you, and maybe that may or may not be your case, but like, how do you balance, how do you balance the job with the writing? Is there sort of like a shutdown process where you can really get into a new space, or do you find maybe your job is very creatively engaging and in a way that seems to flow nicely into the writing? How's that worked out for you?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. It's always a tough balance. Now, for me, the good part is always that there is a little bit of a light, like when I know that this 414 rule is very simplifying, right? Because I know that there's going to be 1 year, which is about to come, which is going to be completely, like I right now, for instance, this sabbatical is just 3 months. It's like just in the middle of a job. So I'm not really, I don't count this, but I know that in another 18 months or so, I'll be out on the road again. So what that helps me with is that in this period, I'm extremely disciplined in a very, almost very engineer-like linear way, which is I write Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday for about an hour and a half after work. And I try to produce 400 words like as kind of a benchmark. And then between Saturday and Sunday, every day for each of these 3 days, right? And then between Saturday and Sunday, I write for 1 day for 4 hours. And that could, like, that's typically a Saturday afternoon. We have kids, so we have two kids right now, pretty young. So we hire a babysitter, and for 4 hours I'm writing on a Saturday. Without fail, Saturday afternoon is committed to writing, right? So with that kind of an output, you're talking about a 12, you are producing about 2,200 words a week without fail. I never fail if I'm writing during this period. And so you're talking about like a 50,000 word novel or 80,000 word novel is completed within a 9 month cycle, which I typically abandon because it's not very good. And then I write another draft. And so within a period of like 3, 4 years, I have completed a pretty solid novel between a combination of research and writing. And then I have like, and then I take a year off to like either like during that time I further refine the idea or whatever. Like it always gets completed within a 4 year span, if you will.
That's beautiful, man. What do your kids do during the sabbatical?
Yeah, so this is going to be the first one with them because right now they're like 18 months and 1 month, and we are kind of thinking about it right now. How to? We are going to do four. What's changed now is that. We won't do like what we did, which is just land in Europe and try to figure out how to get to India. Like, but it'll be more like we are thinking of three chunks, like 4 months in Spain, 4 months in Philippines, and 4 months in perhaps Cambodia. And like the kind of the anchor events are there in Cambodia. We're going to work in an orphanage with our hands, really like give our daughter who's 4 years old, like, just like exposure to like life in a very tough environment and like also be able to contribute, whatever, like work with our hands and contribute to that environment. So that's 4 months in an orphanage in Cambodia, 4 months in Spain, I guess, learning a little bit of the Spanish as a family, and then 4 months in like undefined in Philippines writing. That's kind of the broad thought, is that like 4 months of being in one place, and having some anchor which the kids are anchored around, and then like letting the rest, and then like just reconstruct a life. So in Spain we'll hire a nanny, in Philippines we'll hire a nanny, in Cambodia we'll hire or we'll do something in the orphanage with like, so that there's childcare and there's enough time for us to do our thing.
That's
So
great.
yeah, that's the plan, and let's see how it all kind of like works out. But that's kind of the rough thought that we'll embark on with,
Have you ever on these sabbaticals, like have you ever thought about just saying, well, this is pretty nice, and why go back, I guess. I mean, have you ever considered that? Is it, or is it, are you pretty certain that you need both?
I don't, for now I think I need both, but I'm also a little bit like I guess I've not, like, I think there is a lot of the American burden is too high to figure out your true purpose in life, sort of a thing, right? I've seen that kind of a discussion in so many of the like the self-help world and all this stuff, which is follow your dream, find your true purpose. There's a lot of pressure to find that, and for me I'm like not in that camp at all. I'm more like in the camp of like purifying myself as much as I can so that my tendency, true tendency. So like 10 years ago, I didn't even know I could write a book, right? I was an engineer, a business school guy who had taken a year off to travel. And then suddenly in the middle of the year, I was like, oh, this is so fun. And like so many Indians could do it in my generation, and they're not doing it at all because we are so weighed down by our family and our community and all that stuff. So I started to write for that reason alone, that I'm like, and that's why the book did well in India, because it was very, like it just had like it was a part of the culture, like it became a part of the zeitgeist of culture in a way, because India was changing and I was like early in that change cycle happening of moving from a traditional to a modern world, and I think it just became a part of the zeitgeist then. But anyway, like so I didn't even know like 10 years ago that I would write, and now I don't know is the answer. Maybe in the next, after this, like 2 years later, when we go to Spain, we'll be like, maybe, I don't know, playing, learning Spanish and teaching Spanish is my true purpose for that. I like, I'm just not in that burden to figure out that there is one purpose in my life right now. Like, I'm just more like, how do I purify myself through my, I guess, spiritual practice, like through meditation and through creation, constantly creating, and let that become the thrust to figure out what that purpose is.
Well, it really seems as though you've balanced the East and the West in a beautiful way. I mean, it's maybe also kind of this metaphor for who you are as a someone, an Indian person living in America and working, and it just seems that you've done an amazing job of this. So I just really really appreciate that.
Or done well, or done neither well, depending on how you look at
Yeah, I mean,
it.
I'm a big believer in balance. I'm a big believer in that we need to you know, in that it's all the, you know, you, if we can hold all those perspectives like that, that's really what's, we're going to miss out on things if we don't. I mean, there are things, you know, if people, you know, say, oh gosh, you know, America has it all wrong. India's got it all right. You know, they're, well, maybe they're going to miss some things if you know, if the opposite is true and, oh, America's got it all right. India, well, I don't know, you know, India's got some great stuff. And so, you know, my wife and I lived in Bali for six months, last year. And that's, and it was really, you know, it was just so important to get some kind of new perspective and new culture and then returning. You know, I loved what you said about those first couple of days back in the city, because in a way it, to me, it catalyzes the gifts that you got during that year. It actually gives it, it like waters those seeds. Because I didn't, you know, without any contrast, I have no insights, you know? And so, that's also a really important part for me is constantly providing myself with the contrast of, to see where I'm at.
Good thought. Yeah.
How do you feel, what do you feel like is something that, like a problem that you see a lot of artists make? I mean, we kind of talked about it there, but, you know, what has been your experience with the real detriment of leaning on your creative work too much? And, you know, is that something you've totally written off? Or, I mean, or if it's, you know, like I heard Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, say when she had kept her job, you know, very, very, very long into the process. And then, you know, of course, when she just became a mega bestseller, then she left her teaching job, I think, you know. But is that something that you've, how strongly do you feel about that? And how much would you, let's say if your writing took off to the millions, and we're talking, you know, like where money was really easy, but you'd have to keep writing, you know, where do you feel like you'd go with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've thought about that. Like, what if a book, and like, I've been in that situation many times, right? Like the second novel that I wrote in India, it's India. So I didn't expect for it to, like, you know, make a great income. But what happened was that a Hollywood producer bought the rights at the same time as there were three competing studios. Mm-hmm. And the Hollywood guys like upped the bid like crazy. And I got like it's almost like inheritance money from out of nothing came from like a novel, which was kind of a rookie effort in all honesty. It's not like that great a book, but it got a very good movie deal. But and then again, I had the same, I was kind of faced with the same choice. And then I don't know. I feel like unless it's a very ridiculous amount of money, which I don't think anybody has, but like for instance, I'm very honest about my like finances. If you look at my blog and stuff. So I think,
yeah, I love that.
So my second novel, I think I got like about $220,000 in a year for it, which is very good money to just like quit for, or like at least contemplate quitting and writing, like trying to at least make it as a full-time writer, blogger, whatever. But then again, I had the same point that it's not money that's going to allow me to quit for years to come. And then again, I'm like in that point of like, I feel like that I'll keep depleting the well. My creativity will come from the same shallow well. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really liking the world right now that I'm living in, which my well depletes with every book. And I have an extended period of time where I have to worry about nothing, no money, no audience, no platform. I worry about nothing. I just worry about filling the well. Mm-hmm. And then once I come back, I have written something that I'm really, really proud of. And then I do market it very well. Like I actually feel like I'm very good at like marketing my novels because I invest money in them. I do advertising for them. Like I do a full 360 marketing for my books, which do allow them to get to a good impetus. And after that, it has to have its own life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the job is giving me all this stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So I, like, at least for now, I feel like this balancing those two is allowing me to be very creative in my writing and then subsequently in getting the work out.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious. I'll ask you the last question that I ask here on the show. And if you could go back in time, maybe 10 years ago when you started writing, or, through the experience that you've had so far, if you could write yourself a note and give it to yourself back and whenever, when would you choose to give it to yourself? And also, what would that note say that you feel like would be the best thing that you could say to yourself?
Oh yeah, good question. I would actually not go back almost 10 years. I would go back 3 4 years ago when I was so the note I would say is that there is this and I'll tell you the note and why I would give myself that note first. There is this beautiful thought in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali where they say that the life is like the flight of an eagle, where you flap your wings high and then you bring the wings down gracefully. So in a sense, you push the boundaries of experience to to its highest form, and then you kind of slowly start to retreat and withdraw from the world of experiences. So that's kind of that's the note I would write to myself. But why I would write that note was that there was a period of time about 4 or 5 years ago when I was in that period, and I didn't know that like I had perhaps pushed the limits of experiences because I traveled a lot. I'd taken multiple years off to travel, and it was time for me to really go deep within and like cut off from the world of experience itself. Like, so there was a period of deep emptiness in my life in which I was drinking and going to Broadway shows and all that stuff and not feeling any sense of satisfaction at all. And I just didn't know what the answer was. And I wish I had known this, that like that there would be a period of time when sitting on a mat for an extended period of time would be the purpose of my life. I don't know how to, yeah. So I think that would have been very helpful at that stage of time to have like flapped my wings down more gracefully than I did. So I think I took a lot of time to just kind of like waste my time like experiencing more things when I didn't want to anymore, you know?
Yeah, it was
So
time to reset. Yeah.
yeah. So I think I should have just like gone within a little sooner, you know? Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Don't forget to pick up Karen's new book, The Yoga of Max's Discontent. You can find links to it at karenbajaj.com, KaranBajaj.com. Or you can go to darkenthepage.com/053, and I'll have all the links to everything we talked about today. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review on iTunes. That would be a great way to help us get the show out to more people. You can always send me feedback. darkenthepage@gmail.com is how to reach me. And until the next show, go make great art.